Board Game Kiki, Episode 1. Today we're talking about the games we played and our overall experiences at Origins 2018. Hello, and thank you for downloading Men on Board. My name is Aaron.
This is Josh.
And I'm Matt.
Matt, recording live.
Recording woo-hoo! Live, but the script went through my head, and I was just waiting. Like, it was supposed to be, like, I was waiting for Jameson to say my name. I was just like, there's not that name there.
Jameson could not be with us today.
Yeah, because we are at Origins in Columbus, Ohio.
Best time ever!
We are actually sitting in our hotel room right before we're about to check out on Sunday on our little table with all our podcast equipment.
Because we are ridiculous.
Yes.
We did everything we could to record here.
Yeah.
If that means sitting on the beds and sitting at the little table.
Disclaimer, we're also operating on very little sleep. And it's fine. It's great. It's been great.
So you might have heard at the intro of this episode, and I'm not quite sure what you heard because we still haven't 100% locked in what the name of this is going to be. So when we started the podcast, we wanted to start it off as bi-weekly just to make sure that we weren't overcommitting. We definitely wanted to undersell and overdeliver. So because this episode isn't really going to fit into our normal format of having a category, looking at two games, comparing. You've listened to the show. You're aware. We wanted to create a kind of special episode that is just a conversation amongst us as friends in terms of what we've been playing or what we've been doing. This is kind of like an et cetera category. We're going to try to keep these episodes sporadic. They're not going to be coming every month or anything like that. It's just going to be whenever we, for some reason, have a motivation to record one of these. It's going to be a little bit shorter in length. We're going to try to keep it to somewhere in the half an hour to max of 45 minute territory, probably closer to half an hour. And yeah, sit down and
it's a tasty treat for your ears.
Yeah.
For your listening pleasure.
Like a this fine is for the coffee break mint. Instead of the lunch
yeah.
break.
See, this is so weird for me because we don't do the what have we been playing lately. So
cool.
This is the first time that we're really doing the talking about
well,
stuff like that.
Also, for right now, our what have you been playing lately isn't really a lately.
Yeah.
It's what did you just play in the last 72 hours.
Yeah, we played a lot. Full disclosure, also, we played a lot of games this weekend.
Yeah, so let's get to it. Where do we want to start?
How do you guys feel Origins went? Aaron, you've been here before. Matt, this was your first Origins.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here before, too, but this is my first time coming with my partner. What did you guys take away from the convention? Was it positive? Was it negative?
This definitely felt bigger than last year.
I also feel like it felt bigger than last year. Maybe it's the familiarity that I'm coming at it with, but it felt very welcoming and very like a homecoming. Someone described it here as board game summer camp, and I really liked that. I liked that description a lot because I feel like I just ran into people, chatted a bunch. But I still, we're on day five now, or the final day of the convention, and I don't feel like I've even scratched the surface of everything that's out in that hall. Like right now I'm itching to get back out there because I still haven't played the games that I came here to play, let alone all the other ones that I didn't know were out there that I wanted to go discover. I didn't talk to nearly as many designers, as many publishers as I usually get to. And I still feel that like there's a lot to do. So for anyone that's thinking about coming and worried what they're going to do, we've been busy the entire time.
Yeah, absolutely. The dealer hall has felt very crowded this year, not in an uncomfortable way, but just definitely it seems that it's a little bit busier this year. They split the gaming hall into two separate gaming halls, which is actually kind of cool.
It's a little strange, but it's cool. It's weird they didn't keep them together so they could close one. Like they closed the middle section at night.
At night, the middle section
and you can't
closes,
walk that was a little strange, but it was fine. It worked well.
Yeah. I love seeing the number of exhibitors that are here. I love walking through that dealer hall and checking out what's coming out, getting a chance to actually talk to people.
So if you've not been to a con before, there is nothing like the energy of a con, I think, because there are just people that share your hobby and your passion everywhere. Literally on every physical surface you can think of, in a hotel lobby, in an alleyway between, there are tables full of people just playing every game.
Yeah.
And until you come here, you go, oh my God, I just play board games. That's the thing. There are thousands of people doing it all night long, literally all night long, people will be playing board games. And it's a really great environment. It's great to see. And I think Origins does it really well.
And that's the very first time that Josh and I came to Origins. I always describe the feeling as my first time at Origins was like my very first Pride, because I walked in and I was like, there are so many of us. And it has that like really great feeling of community.
That's what it felt like going to PAX. Because mm-hmm. That was my first con. So like walking in, those 3 days were just pure overwhelming. While coming here, I was like, all right, it's still super exciting, but at least takes the edge off that from the moment I walked in on Thursday, I was ready to go. I think PAX took me like a whole day. And if you've never been to a con before, I think that's something to plan for yourself, that you need a whole like a whole day just to mentally absorb everything that's going on, because even if you look at a little map, you're going to have no idea what the layout is like until you get there and just meander around.
You need to do a lap first. You really need to come in for an hour or two with no plans and just wander around and get a little bit lost in it, get your head in the convention mode. And I think it's interesting what Aaron said about it feeling like Pride, because Pride is also this weekend in Columbus here, which adds a really neat vibe to this convention in particular for us as a primarily gay podcast too. Not that that makes any difference, but there are Ally and Gamer, G-A-Y-M-E-R ribbons floating around the convention like crazy. So there's this real feel of community and welcoming that I don't know that you get at tons of other cons, but it feels special to me being here.
Something mentally for me that's slightly different between like going to a game con instead of like a Comic-Con or something like that is Comic-Con, everyone dresses up and stuff. Here, everyone's themselves. Mm. So when you see someone with an Ally badge or something, you're like, that's you yourself. Mm-hmm. You're not here like dressed up as a costume, a character, going around enjoying the con as that person. These are just people walking off the street who are like, I want this badge because I want to put it on my name tag as I'm walking around.
Board Game Geek and I think it was Greater Than Games both had the pronoun flags as well.
Yeah, that was really cool.
In terms of inclusiveness for this year's con, like A+.
That's been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So let's dive into it and start talking about what we actually have been playing. The first one I want to talk about is our experience at Queen Games. I
don't know if
love Queen Games.
Yeah. Queen Games was super welcoming and sat down with us and we got a chance to take a look at what they have going on and what they have coming up.
Yeah, we got to demo Luxor, which is their Spiel nominee for the year. And it was fun. It's kind of a simple explore a dungeon, move your meeples around, and collect the tiles from the board to make sets. But their hand movement cards that you have, they're in a very specific order. So out of the five cards, you can only play the leftmost or the rightmost
without being able to rearrange them.
And once the game starts, once your hand's dealt to you, you can never rearrange your cards. And the new one you get just goes into the middle of your hand, so it keeps pushing things to the outside. And that made it, I mean, I guess that was the hook of the game, mm-hmm. Which was great, because if it didn't have that, it would have been a very simple move around the board type thing.
And I think Aaron spoke to this a little bit earlier when we were chatting, but I think that's what we learned a little bit about Queen Games, is that we really got an appreciation for their business model, which was to make family-friendly, lighter-weight games and then increase them in complexity with different modules. Now, we didn't see any of the add-on content that I'm sure is present for Luxor. He said there were a few other things that you could add into the game.
He did say there are modules already
out
there that will be released when the game has its mm-hmm. big release, which I think it was an
Essen release.
Yeah, so August-y.
He either said Essen or Gen Con.
I think he said Essen release. They'll have some copies at Gen Con for sale. They didn't have any copies for sale at this con, mm-hmm. But I think Essen was the big release because he was saying the German publisher, and then they were going to bring it over.
Yeah,
right.
I think.
Yeah, it was just one of those phenomenal games that was really straightforward. You could learn it in about 5-10 minutes, and then once you actually started diving into it and seeing the complexity of the limit to your hand and how you had to kind of think ahead as to which side you're going to take from. It gave me almost that Mombasa feeling of where you're going to play your cards.
A little bit.
But in a more, I was
a
able
much
to process
more streamlined
it. Yes.
Way.
Yeah.
Which we also got to play Alhambra for all of us.
Yeah.
It was our first time playing. And shout out to
Travis Reynolds.
Yeah, who gave us our first piece of swag. Yeah. He was, I think he was very thrown that none of us had played Alhambra, so
yeah.
He wonderfully gave us a copy, and we last night we ran and played it.
Yeah.
And it had that same feeling of, I think, most other games, that the rules are super easy to learn. There's not much complexity in the rules. And then as you start playing, you're like, oh, this is kind of simple. And then towards the middle of the game, I was like, all right, I'm seeing some stuff now. And then at the end of the game, I was like, I would do things a lot differently now that I've seen it play out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's that complexity hidden there. And right. That's a game that has loads and loads of modules to throw in.
Yeah, because Alhambra is one of those games that I've always heard about, just never played, just because it wasn't in any of our collections. And after that playthrough, I can definitely see why everyone talks about that.
Yeah.
And why it has the legs that it has. Because, it was just so straightforward, but really interesting, meaningful decisions.
I want to talk a little bit about some of their new stuff they have coming up.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
We got to take a look at Franchise, which I thought looked really interesting. It had a really big, sizable map with a lot of different route building components to it.
The map was really huge. I was thrown by how big the map was.
Now, we saw a prototype, general prototype edition with some finalizations. There were a few misspellings. Pittsburgh might have been one of those, but that's okay. We corrected them.
We love them anyway.
Yeah, we really do. But so we got to see it. It had a neat route building sort of empire expansion feel to it. In the 1950s, you want to start making franchises and expand into bigger cities and hold dominance in those cities while also sort of increasing the profitability and viability of your independent franchise. So
from his description, in a good way, it made me think of a combination of like Power Grid and Food Chain Magnet.
Yeah.
But in a very accessible family way, and combining those two things into a different, unique product.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember when those ones were. Those were coming to Kickstarter in August.
Right. So we also learned a little bit about Queen Games has been moving a lot more of their releases to Kickstarter. And we got to dive into the industry a little bit with that. They've got another game coming out called Skylands
and Bastille. They have
Skylands is another game they have coming out, and Bastille are also both going to be hitting Kickstarter relatively soon here. So keep a lookout for those from Queen Games. And thank you again, Queen Games, for just being great.
Yeah.
Yep. So Aaron and I also this weekend, because it was before Josh got here, we got to meet with Betsier Games, and we spoke with Matt Ryan, who told us all about 1 Week Werewolf and Werewolf Legacy. I think Aaron is the most super excited for Werewolf Legacy, so we'll let you start.
Yeah, I'm excited for both, just because I followed the 1 Week Ultimate Werewolf Kickstarter. I ultimately didn't back it, but it looks really interesting. I'm actually kind of regretting that upon seeing it, just because it looks like it's the first of the werewolf series that looks like an actual board game, and we didn't get to sit down to have a playthrough with it just because that table was constantly full, but it had an actual kind of deduction board game feel, which I love deduction board games, so now I'm kind of feeling a little bit of FOMO, but at least I'll be able to pick it up at retail.
They're at least a company with their Kickstarter, like with any of their games, that you know if you miss it online, you're not missing.
True.
You're not missing the game. Like, you're going to be able to go to the store and get it.
Didn't you say the components looked really exceptional on that, Aaron?
Yeah.
Was that just
at least
Kickstarter
on the Kickstarter, because
okay,
they only had prototype components. The components that did look phenomenal was actual Werewolf Legacy. When you open up the Werewolf Legacy box, it is this... It's not leather-bound, but it just looks like
It's a faux leather.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
But with like,
it's not a cloth, it's a faux like level
like the book from Hocus Pocus. Like,
no, it doesn't have all the fuzziness.
Okay.
On it. It's like a leather bound journal, but the size of a photo album. It's actual photo, like old school photo album.
Cool.
Sized.
With all the pages have that gold edging.
That's really cool.
And that I think that might have been an inside bound like a photo album.
Oh really?
Yeah, because there was a glossiness to the pages and everything inside.
But we were able to kind of flip through the Legacy book. No spoilers, obviously. We didn't get any spoilers, really.
But no, the book was empty when we saw it. The cover and everything was done, and he said that's the way it's going to look, and the book quality was how it's going to look, but all the pages were blank.
Yeah, but it was... as soon as I saw that book, I was like, oh, I'm in. Like, I'll absolutely be getting this. But it's really cool how it's going to work, because the campaign... will work like a legacy game. It's about, I think it's a 15-game campaign.
And yes, and I think unlike other legacy games, it's 15 games.
Yeah.
There's variable. No variability. It is, it's 5 years, each broken into 3 games. So it's like five little mini chapters, and then 3 under each one. Yeah. But the way he made it sound was there's no variability. You know there's 15 games, and there's going to be 15 games.
Yeah, and that book was thick, so it looks like there's going to be a lot of different options. And so it sounds like the price point's going to be somewhere around $60, but they will be selling a recharge pack, which I think is just going to be another copy of that book for about $30. So the campaign can be played through a second time, and it sounds like with the amount of choices and variability that it's something that you really could. Like, it's not like Pandemic Legacy that once you play it, you're really not going to play it again for that second time.
I like this recharge pack model that legacy games are moving towards. Like, Charterstone has it, and I think something else I know.
Gloomhaven, I think, has one.
Yeah, Gloomhaven also has it. I think that's really cool. So if you make it through 2 playthroughs of Gloomhaven, I'm impressed. Heavily impressed.
But yeah, after seeing that and like hearing a little bit more about it, because the idea of Werewolf Legacy, even though I like Ted Alsbach, I like Rob Davio, it's just a party game.
I don't
legacy.
Think it naturally jives in your head to put those two words together.
But neither did Pandemic.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, but now I'm genuinely excited for that to come out.
Cool. I want to talk about one that I knew about going into the convention, or just briefly touch on. I'd heard of the game Reef, people were constantly comparing it to Azul. It was a new release, and it was a convention release, which is atypical for Origin. A lot of games don't get released here. So I think when I got here, it sold out very, very quickly within the first day or two. And I hadn't had a chance to demo it beforehand, but I enjoyed it. It's a tile laying game. It's really like a shape laying game, really, where you build vertically and horizontally. The unique twist on this is that you have a hand of cards, and the cards have to be played in a specific order that lends itself to building an engine. Well, they don't have to be played in a specific order, but the cards help you develop an engine, because on the top portion of the card, there are pieces of coral reef that you'll be getting to add to your thing, but on the bottom part of the card is a way to score. So you're always adding coral and scoring, and you want to play the cards in a way that makes sense to be continuously scoring, continuously building points.
However, I think every card is laid out in such a way that whatever new coral you're adding
doesn't match
at all to what the current thing that you're allowed to score is. Mm-hmm. So it's always what can I add with this card to score with my next card? And then with that card, you're like, what can I add to score? So it's just constantly trying to chain one or two. I think you only have a hand size of like three.
I think.
So you can't plan that far ahead, but you need to always be at least one step ahead, because towards the end of the game, I think you constantly have to be scoring every turn. In the beginning, it's not so bad because you're kind of building up a reef, but I think towards the end, we were scoring points every single time because the reef just got bigger and bigger, and it was easier to score the goals.
So I would compare this game heavily to Azul, not in the same way, but I think the same crowd that likes Azul is a crowd that would enjoy this. It was not my favorite that I played by any stretch of the imagination. I actually felt it played a little bit too quickly, and that I didn't have as much agency as I wanted in the game, because the cards kind of forced my hand a little bit, and I just didn't find it that enticing. But people raved for it. I mean, it sold out very quickly. It's gotten really positive buzz at the con, so I'm sure you're going to hear about that. That was Reef by Renegade Games?
No, it's it's Next Move Game, which is the imprint from Plan B Games.
Okay, so it's Reef put out by Plan B Games.
Yeah, super nice components, super colorful.
Yeah, very colorful.
The components are super nice. They're heavy.
They're like Mega Blocks.
They are like Mega Blocks.
They're literally like building Mega Blocks.
And they're nice and heavy and clanky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been a big fan of Pandasaurus games for a while. I really like Dinosaur Island. I really like Wasteland Express delivery service. So I got a chance to sit down there, and we played The Mind, which I've heard very polarizing things about, because some people call it not really a game and more of an activity, and other people are really raving about it and saying how much fun that they're having playing it. It is a card game. It's a very small box. I think MSRP is for about $15. And it's a deck of cards, 1 to 100. You, each level, it's a 2 to 4 player game. Each level of the game, like on level 1, everyone starts off with a hand of 1 card. Level 2, everyone starts off on a hand of 2 cards. So on and so forth up until the end. I think for 4 players, that's 8 levels. 2 players, 12 levels.
I think, and then 3 is 10.
Yeah. But what you do in this game is you cannot talk. you are just playing cards in sequence,
trying to go from lowest to highest, and the cards in the deck are numbered 1 to 100.
And it's all about just the internal rhythm and body language of your friends. It's really fun. Like it there is a silliness to it. Like it's not a in-depth strategy game, but for a quick little filler, it had some really fun tension, really fun moments of just sitting there and having that kind of like good feeling of like, do I play this now? Is this bad?
You guys play that a lot. Tension in that. I still have not gotten to play it, but I really want to.
Yeah. I picked it up, so it'll be in the collection now. So that was The Mind. The other game that Pianosaurus was demoing, I don't think it was available for purchase, was Nyctophobia. And this one, we didn't get a chance to play because there was constantly a line of people waiting to play it. It is a game where you have to wear blackout glasses, so you cannot see the board, which I found really fascinating because I'd heard that the designer was inspired to make the game because she had a blind relative and took that experience and tried to turn it into a game. But it's all based just on tactile touching of the board, which I really want to try a demo of that because it looks really, really fascinating.
Yeah, looking, because we were playing The Mind right next to them, I didn't get any sense of what the rules were, but at least looking at the components, they were all hard plastic, like castle-y looking things with, I guess, ridges on the top. And it seemed like, and I think some were circles and some were squares, and there was different amounts of ridges on the top. And it seemed like that's what they were all fiddling with to get a memory of which pieces with which ridges were where, and how to move about the board. And it's having no idea what the goal of the game is. It's intriguing to think, like, having looked at it, what are you actually trying to do, and how much strategy are you able to put into a game that you can't see?
I love seeing the diversity of games that come out at cons like this. Like, I would never think to create a board game, and hearing the individual stories of what goes into a little game like that whenever it were a con, there's always something unique and some little twist of like why people did this, what special thing happens into a game. So I spent some time at the Yellow booth because I had some friends working there, and picked up a copy of Decrypto, which to me is a new improved, in my opinion, version of Codenames. Had a little deduction component to it. Basically, you've got a hidden code, and you've got words that are associated with that code, and you're trying to give clues to your team without being too revealing to the other team as they're trying to deduce and decipher your encryption. I thought it was great. I really liked the dynamic that came about when it played. It's one of those games that you sit down to play, and at first, the first round, you're kind of going, what's all this? And by the end, you're much more heavily invested. You've built up a body of knowledge about your opponent's guesses and clues, and it lends some really nice gameplay. I think it's a game that people could sit down with a wide variety of groups of gamers, gamers or non-gamers, and play very easily.
Yeah, because it's like something like Codenames, you could have two or three people at the table who are really engaged in the process, and then have a bunch of people around you who are like, listen, we're trying to associate this with one of these things. Like, do you just want to help with that part of it? And they don't have to engage in the rest of it if they don't want to.
Because people came up and watched us play.
Yeah.
Like, we were playing in a hallway, and we had spectators ending up watching us play, which we had for a couple other games too. But
just because of the way we float around, Josh, Aaron, and I don't do a lot together. We kind of all branch off, do our own things.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer is a great way to go at it. But one thing we did all do together is we played our first mega game, which the one we played here was called Night Falls, and it was a vampire human villager themed game.
It'll be coming to Kickstarter down the road.
I think it is. Later on this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
It just got picked up by
Catalyst?
It's the publisher that did Big Trouble in Little China.
So this one in particular wasn't... So most mega games are games meant for like groups of 50 or more, and they're put on teams, and there's a rules and things going on, but it's a lot of role-playing to kind of get to your goals. This one, however, there was a lot of actual board action. It was... My eyes kind of lit up as soon as I saw it, because we have raved in a previous episode about asymmetrical team games.
Yes.
And this basically was an asymmetrical team game, but in a social party atmosphere that We had 8 of us playing, so we had 4 teams of 2. And that was actually nice to get to learn in a smaller group. I think there was definitely game mechanics that worked better in a bigger group, but it was nice that we didn't have to deal with like 25 people all trying to learn a game together.
So when Matt and I were at PAX, we really wanted to try to get into a mega game, but because we don't plan things very far in advance, we didn't get a chance to get into any of them. So whenever we saw a mega game on the grid for Origins, we're like, oh, we're going to sign up for that. We definitely want to play. The game plays from 8 to 32 people, but unfortunately only 8 people signed up for the event. I guess Origins might not be that big for mega games.
It was the only one here, so Origins might not be the particular crowd that enjoys it.
The Origins event grid could also use a little bit of help on finding things. No offense, Origins. That would actually be my one criticism of the con. Totally unrelated, but let's talk about the event grid at some point.
And the event registration.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't... We got the chance to play a mega game. Wasn't that true con, huge mega game experience, but it was still a ton of fun. And I agree with you, Matt. It was a lot easier to kind of process everything that was happening, because even when we walked away, I still had not the best grasp on everything that had been happening, because you're only doing your part. You're not doing another person's part. And I can't imagine how much more diminished that would have been with more people.
Oh, yeah. I think it would have been so much more chaotic if there was 10 people on each half instead of 4 on each half.
Yeah.
And the designer said there are some revisions. He's still got a few things to work out in the game, but it was enjoyable. I had a frustrating experience with my roulette, but I appreciated the chance to get to play it.
But I walked away from that saying we would do this.
Oh, yeah.
That our group of friends would thrive on it and make a whole night out of it.
I'm definitely planning on checking out this Kickstarter. I signed up to be on the mailing list to find out when it was going to go out, just because to have that kind of mega game experience in a retail form, and to have a mega game experience in a form of board game mechanics, it's really fascinating. It was a fun time. I'm definitely going to be following the Kickstarter, because I would like to have that in my collection in order to have the option to host that. So I think it was on Friday, Matt and I got a chance to sit down at the Asmodee booth and check out a couple of their upcoming games. The first one was the Ticket to Ride New York, which is a 15-minute version of Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, and that is a hard 15 minutes. That's not an exaggeration, like we played fast.
That game sounds so interesting.
It is meant to be played in 15 minutes.
Target exclusive, correct?
Yes, Target exclusive.
Oh, that's perfect for them.
Yeah, and you only have 15, and they're not trains, they're actually taxi cabs. But so in Ticket to Ride, there's always this point in the game where the tension amps up, because you can feel like it's about to end and you're nervous about someone taking your routes. That is this game from start to finish. Because Ticket to Ride sometimes can be kind of relaxing. You're just like playing your trains, moving along. Sometimes you're going to get blocked and that can get frustrating. But or maybe not even sometimes, the competitive way, you're usually getting blocked. This game is just the tense feeling of I have to get everything done. I have to get before everyone else. If I don't take it right now, someone else is going to take it. And it feels that way for the entire game.
Yeah, on this board, almost every route is 1 or 2 spaces long. There's a few that are 3, and I think there's like 1-4. But everything is so short that most Ticket to Ride games, you have that moment. Everyone just hoards colors, hoards colors, hoards colors, until one person breaks, and then everyone throws dozens of trains on the board. I don't think I ever had more than 2 cards in my hand, because as soon as I had a match of 2, I played them. The board was probably like 8 inches by like 20 inches. Like, it's a really small,
just Manhattan
small board. So there's no time to delay and think. That if you have an action you need to do, you just have to go and take it. And it was super stressful.
So that was Ticket to Ride New York. The other game that we demoed with them was the upcoming expansion for Seven Wonders Armada. This one really changed up the game for me. What Armada does is it adds a sideboard to your wonder board that has a series of ships that you're able to progress. Each ship is in 4 different colors, and those colors match up with 4 of the card suits in Seven Wonders. So as you play one of those cards, you can pay an additional cost to move up your ship. which can unlock certain bonuses. Another big component in this is that it adds a naval battle, where instead of just having battles with your two neighbors, whoever has the highest naval strength will be able to get bonus points.
Amongst the whole table.
Amongst the whole table. And then whoever is in last place will get negative points.
And this is an addition to the regular battle.
Yes.
It doesn't take the place of it. You'll battle your neighbors on land, and then the whole table will battle each other on sea.
Did it feel like the conflict got to be too much in the game? Like that, because that was always a very small component of Seven Wonders that I enjoyed, that it wasn't the only component.
For me, I think it ups that component when you clump the two battles together, because you can't, I think, to ignore both of them is a big problem, because the naval battle points get negative points get bigger as the rounds go on, while for military victory the negatives stay the same the whole game. So if you're getting destroyed in the Navy in the last round, that's a lot of points to be losing.
Yeah, and the only nice thing about that, though, with the naval, there's only one winner, so it's not going to add a crazy amount of additional points, because if you lose all three naval battles, you're gonna be at, I think, negative 6 points, which is a pretty big swing in that game. The other thing I really like about this game is that it added one of the new, not mechanics, or just think one of the new symbols of their, you know, Rosetta Stone of different symbols, is one that shows two arrows around in a circle, which allows you to interact with somebody two places away. It allows you, I think I saw a card that you trade with someone two seats away, as
you'll
well go, as one
you'll fight people two squares away,
which is one of the things that in Seven Wonders, one of my, I think I said one of the things I don't really like about it, well, I can like it and I also dislike it, is that you feel like you don't really have a lot of control over what's going on with someone that's not one of your neighbors,
especially in the bigger games.
Yes, with this it seems like you'd be much more interested in what people on the other side of the table or a couple people down from you are doing.
Yeah, I like.
Sounds great.
I like that with Babel and this, they're branching out into this bigger table play.
It definitely takes away some of the simplicity of Seven Wonders, though. I think the game has gotten much more complex. If you were going to teach all these things together, I don't know that you'd play with all of them together.
I don't think you
ever
would ever use all the expansions together.
But the complexity has definitely increased a little bit, I think, as you
for
add
sure.
these things on. Babel and Armada specifically.
Yeah.
I got to sit down with Simon a little bit, which is always one of my favorite booths to go sit at. They do a great job presentation-wise. You know, some of their games are not always my favorite, but they really have a great demo staff set up. I got to play Dragon Castle, which is one of their new releases coming out. It's a Mahjong-inspired tile game where there's a collective castle built up of tiles that are beautiful in the middle of the board that a dragon has destroyed, and you independently are taking tiles and drafting them from the central board, following certain rules of how you can take the tiles to place on your board and eventually build your own castle that is the most favorable to the dragon. And there's three or four different set collection styles of scoring points in that game. There's a lot of puzzly aspects to how you lay the tiles out. There's a bit of advanced planning required in where you put little pagoda roofs down and what you're trying to do to block your opponents to do other things to prevent them from scoring as well. So I really enjoyed it. Beautiful game. I think if you like puzzle games, I preferred this one to Reef when I played it, but I thought it was great. I got to see a couple of the other games coming up. Zombicide Green Horde was set up there. That looked beautiful. And there was another sort of a robot engine building game that they were just starting to demo that was coming out soon. So be on the lookout for all those hitting stores soon.
I think for me, the gaming highlight in terms of board games being played for me was I got to play 1754, which is a... I think part of their American series from Academy Games. It's very similar to things 1775 and 1812, where one side's since this one's in 1754, one side's the French, one side's the British, and basically you're fighting for area territory control on this map. But I got to play the giant version, where the board was
huge.
I think the board was like 3 feet by 6 or 7 feet, nice wood made, all painted, lacquered. There was actual grass and topography and rolling hills and hedges, and
it was like one of those little miniature railroad setups that you see in museums and stuff. Yeah,
it was absolutely fantastic to play. I enjoyed the game itself. but being able to play on this map, and the guy, the volunteer that was there, and unfortunately I don't remember his name, he is the man that made the map, and that's, he makes all their giant maps. So that was super great that during some down moments in the game, he would meander over and talk and just get to talk about the map. Yeah, it was definitely the highlight, because nothing, it's cool to play new things, but eventually I'll probably be able to play those new things again. I'm probably never going to be able to play that giant board of a game that I like ever again. And that was really fantastic.
Unless we go to a battlefield and just... Because it was like one of those things...
Well, at this point, the only way to get better is for us to dress up hundreds of people and go into a field and attack each other. That is the only way I can get better from this experience.
You did have a good experience with that, I think.
Yeah, Academy games are great. I think they do like really interesting things.
And they're starting now to branch out. They're going to keep doing their education series and their commitment to education, but we found out they are starting to branch out into more whole family inclusive style games. I think putting them up through Kickstarter, but not abandoning their education stuff.
And speaking of Kickstarters, I got to try one of their games that, when we're recording this, I think the Kickstarter is still live. By the time this airs, I think the Kickstarter will be over.
I think it ends tonight.
Yeah.
And that, I Kickstarted it.
Yeah. So based on us checking it out, Josh ended up Kickstarting it. But I got to play Tutors, which was really cool. One of my favorite things about it is one of the components is somebody's hand. And you are placing rings on the different fingers of that hand. Like, it's literally a cardboard hand, and you're putting rings onto those fingers.
My mind was blown.
Yeah. And
literally blown.
In the Kickstarter version, we found out that the rings are going to, the material that they're going to be made of, you could actually put them onto your actual hand. So, and if you, I guarantee that that is how we will play it at least once.
Absolutely.
To just have them on. But it's like really cool.
The gameplay also looked great though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's one of those games that you look at the board because it has worker placement elements. So it's a little bit overwhelming because there's a lot going on the board. But once you actually learn the rules, it plays pretty straightforward. You're trying to gain control of various houses. As you gain control of the houses, you get new rings. If someone takes control from that house from you, they will take one of your rings. There's several different ways to score points. And each game, the scoring conditions are different, so it has a ton of variability.
Yeah, that was the Tutors coming out of Academy Games. Aaron, Matt and I touched a little bit about, well, Matt said his favorite part. Did you have a favorite part to the convention or one of your favorite things you got to do?
I think it was probably that game of the mind, just because...
The first one we played?
Yeah, because we demoed it at the Panasaurus booth, and it was Matt and I and our other friend Matt, and it was our very first time playing through it, and we ended up winning, which the guy...
Which is the only time we've won, was the first time we played.
But that was just, we had a completely failed attempt at high-fiving each other immediately afterwards, which was embarrassing because there was people around. But yeah, that was probably my favorite experience.
Josh?
One of my favorite experiences, probably still my favorite experience, was I brought one of our group's favorite games, Ladies and Gentlemen, to play. We've talked about this before, though we did an episode on it, but I still love it. It still hits all the same notes for me every time we play it. We sat down in a very public hallway to play it, and usually when we play this game, we get a little bit giddy and a little bit silly, and we still did that because we still threw our gossip things, but we actually had people come over and stop us and go, what are you doing? What's happening over there? We're like, we're just being Victorian ladies and gentlemen. It's nothing out of the ordinary. And one of the highlights of that game, of course, for this one, was that all our friends were there, and one of our friends, Chris, also known as Topher, not my partner Chris, Topher loves this game and got to sit down and play it with us, so... He's here now, and he wants to tell you a little bit about his con experience.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
Topher is filling our role of our token straight person, because Jameson couldn't make it today.
We have a quota that we have to meet every week.
So, Topher, what did you think? Because, so, you're not as big of a board gamer as we are. You play games with us, but you're not nearly at our...
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just
say
crazy.
I certainly don't have the extensive collection that the rest of you have, but...
So what makes you want to come here with us?
Well, not just because you're my friends and everything, but It's always fun playing games with you guys, like getting together, just laying down a game wherever there's space, and then just going at it for like an hour or so, moving on to the next game. But it's also like all the booths available to buy stuff. Like, that's one of the main things I'm super into, just seeing what all the board gaming companies are working on.
Because you are also a big collectible card player.
Yes, absolutely.
Topher, it's a problem. I think Topher might see a part of the convention that we don't even know exists. So yeah, what was your, on that end of things, what was your goal here, I guess? And how does that work here?
I've been working on a project. I have a huge extensive collection of Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And at a point, you just sort of realize, I really don't need the majority of this. So I want to get rid of it, but I'd like to get something out of it. So I had been selling stuff to Cool Stuff Inc. Since fall.
Like through their mail buyback program?
Exactly, yes. And it occurred to me that maybe they'll be willing to buy stuff like if I brought it to the con. So I double checked with them just to make sure it wasn't like a terrible idea. And they were like, oh, absolutely, please bring anything you'd like. And I don't know if the guy was like super happy to see that I brought like two shoe boxes full of like common trading cards. But I did bring like other like more valuable stuff, not like $50 worth, but definitely a good handful of like $5 worth things.
Was it an effective use to come here and do that? Like
it
to come
absolutely
to a,
was.
To come to a board game convention for cards.
Yes.
Topher, what was your favorite experience from the con?
Just being able to talk with a lot of the booth people, hearing all about how like amazing their products are. Like you have Level Up Dice, who like caught me like looking at some of their wares, and it's like their like tagline here is luxury is only a dice roll away, and it's literally luxury dice. Like, they're made out of gemstones. They're made out of like amazing metals.
I didn't even see them.
I actually didn't check out any dice.
I want to go
this entire convention for some reason.
Gemstone dice right now. I want amethyst dice instantly.
Like, it's amazing just because like you feel like the plastic dice, and it's like, yeah, I'm rolling it, but you feel all of these die, and it's like, I'm actually rolling this. I feel the weight of this power.
Lesson of the con, Topher is distracted by pretty shiny things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. We all are distracted by pretty shiny things, if we're being perfectly honest.
And I think Topher is reminding us that we do have a little bit of the con left, so we should probably start wrapping this up.
Absolutely. Right.
But I know that Josh and Matt would absolutely agree with me that the true best experience of this con for us was getting to meet an actual listener that wasn't somebody that we already knew from our day-to-day life that was listening to us as a favor.
To be more clear, we met our first fan in person, and we are super pumped because he's amazing.
Making sure you're listening all the way to the end, Rob.
Yeah.
We saved talking about you until the end. It was fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rob. We had a great time with you. We might have talked your ear off. I apologize. We apparently like to talk a lot. That's why we have a podcast, and you listen to us, which is even more humbling and wonderful. So thank you to our fan.
But he came up to us multiple times over the con.
Yeah,
I think he ran into Josh and Aaron. Then he ran into us at the Secret Cabal meetup. Bought us a round of drinks. Which
all
is
you
crazy.
All you other fans out there listening.
The bar has been set high.
When you meet us.
No, but it truly was. That was a wonderful experience for me that I don't think I'll ever forget.
No, that was cool.
And it just made me really appreciate it because I see the numbers. I always am just so flattered. And when I get like a message from someone, when I get a tweet from someone referencing what we put out, because we really are just doing this because we really like each other's company, and we like talking about this thing that we spend so much of our time doing. But to know that there's people out there that are actually listening to this and appreciating this, you have no idea how wonderful that is and how amazing that makes us feel. So just thank you guys so much for listening.
Shout out to our to our co-pastor Jameson, who is celebrating Father's Day today.
Oh, yeah. Happy Father's Day. It won't come out on Father's Day. But
Jameson, if you're listening, catch yourself up on Origins through this episode.
Yeah. I guess looking towards the future, we'll be at PAX. So one of the first things Rob asked us was if we were having a meetup. For anyone else listening, if you're at PAX, if you see us playing a game and would like to play with us, you just made the meetup happen.
Yeah.
Like that. At no point will any of us, either together or individually, if you come up and say, hey, I'm a fan, would you like to play something? We will, unless we're literally in the middle of doing something.
I'd probably still let you play.
Yeah. Well, but we'll stop whatever it is and go play something with you. Like that is what we are.
Yeah. Thanks, Origins. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
So next week, we'll be back on our regular episode, and that's going to be our prolific expansions with Dominion and Carcassonne. If you'd like to email us, you can reach us at menonboardpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at menonboardpodcast. Find us on Twitter at menonboardpod. Our music is provided by the band Delicious Pastries. I said out of order because we're recording in a hotel room and I don't have my little cheat sheet in front of me. Our website is menonboard.com. We have a guild over on Board Game Geek. Go over there, go on the forums. We would love to talk to you.
Isn't our website menonboardpodcast.com?
Oh, it is. What did I say?
Our website is menonboardpodcast.com.
Yeah. Again, we in the hotel room. Thank you guys for listening and goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Woohoo!
This is our 3-second music pause.
Yeah.
Even though we could talk over it, we just all go silent for 3 seconds.
It makes it easier for the editing, too, because it has it stick out a little bit.
But it's invariable that as soon as it finishes, we all just sit in silence.
Yeah.